Hey, I'm Turlove.
And I'm Emerson. Welcome to Red Square. Every other week, we find people walking in Red Square and stop them to have a deep little chat.
We think that stranger stories can create empathy for others and awareness of the complexities of the human experience.
Throughout high school, it was kind of difficult for me to not just run with the pack and keep going with what everyone else was doing. I don't really know if I have something that's really stuck with me through high school and college. I've changed a lot of my personal interests based on who I'm surrounded by. I feel like it has to do more with like not sure of my own like identity.
I feel like we think we have this stable self, but actually we're like always in flux. We never stay the same.
Yeah, and usually when we just start to feel confident in who we are, the things around us end up changing and we're just left questioning everything.
Like when we move from home to college, everything that we thought made us who we are is suddenly gone. And we have to start thinking about who we really are and what we want to do with our lives on our own.
So today we are going to talk to two people whose identities were tied to something until that something was taken away.
Our first guest today is Luis, a fourth year PhD student studying economics who grew up in Costa Rica, then came to the US to study at Yale. This life transition taught him a lot about who he was and what he was passionate about.
It's definitely a shock because everyone was so smart. And it was difficult to continue to derive my sense of self from academics when I felt like I no longer had that because everyone else was just so smart. Mm-hmm. Also, I think that definitely helped in helping me realize the importance of learning just for the sake of learning. It is, well, for starters, it was difficult for me to face that shock.
Yeah.
Because I came from, not meaning to brag, but being the best at what I did all my life. So I came from being close to the top, if not at the top, for since elementary school all the way up to high school. So I think that was a really deep shock, that experience. So it required me to try and find something more permanent, something not as fickle as your academic performance. And you know, that's where I realized that I'm important as a person regardless.
Yeah.
I have my family, I have my church. So those are things that are there with me no matter how I perform. So even when all my accomplishments go away or when they're forgotten, I'll still have those relationships and that realization that there is still an intrinsic value in my life. And then after I graduated, I didn't have a job set up. I had to go back to Costa Rica because I was here under a student visa, and you can't stay on a student visa if you're not studying. And my first two jobs with my Ivy League degree in mathematics, there were two part-time jobs as English-Spanish translator and wedding singer. Those were my first two jobs out of college, coming back, quote-unquote, in all my glory. Like, I make fun of myself like using that expression and obviously quote it. I tell my undergrad students that should help them realize that a job is a job and that no job is beneath them, that you have to start somewhere and that it's okay if it's a little difficult at the beginning. In fact, it took me about 9 months being back in Costa Rica before I was able to secure an academic job because having gotten my undergrad degree in mathematics, I thought, yeah, math is the thing that I do best. So I approached a local university, the most prestigious university close to where I live, called the University of Costa Rica, their math department, asking them, are there any positions? is there any class that I could teach? And they eventually called me up. I had an interview. They said yes. Much to my surprise, I wasn't a teaching assistant for a course. I was an instructor for two 35-person sections of calculus. Before that, I had only ever had tutoring experience. Mm-hmm. So the then director of the school, that was definitely a vote of confidence in me. I later found out that, at least at the time, they had to strike a balance between their big need for instructors and also having professional instructors. They want instructors with PhDs. So they struck a bit of a compromise in that they would still be willing to hire people even right out of college, like it was my case. I was less than a year out of college, with the understanding that unless you had explicit plans to leave for a PhD in the next 2 to 3 years, they would fire you. So I was the most adjunct of the adjuncts while I was there. But still, I had a job. So that was good. And in retrospect, I think that given my qualifications at the time, other than the fact that I was coming from an Ivy League, if I had been on the hiring committee that hired me, I would have probably not hired myself. But yeah, thankfully, that door did open. And I was there teaching for 3.5 years. While I was there, I had this realization, like, I'm actually reasonably good at this. And I really like it. So, but before then, I hadn't had any explicit teaching experience, but then I discovered that I actually really enjoy teaching. And that made me realize that if I wanted a permanent position as a university professor, I needed a PhD. Mm-hmm. I did not want a PhD in mathematics, just my undergrad degree. So I went for economics instead. So I started making the shift. I enrolled. I was a part of a research program in the Economic Research Center at University of Costa Rica, and I eventually graduated from a master's degree in economics, and then I applied to PhD programs in economics, and I ended up getting here, which was in and of itself a bit of a story because I actually applied to graduate schools 3 times, so 3 consecutive years before I finally had an acceptance. I had 18 no's before the first yes, and each application is about $100,
yeah.
Plus sending your GRE score, plus taking the GRE, taking the TOEFL, which is the test of English as foreign language, sending those scores, and so on. So I had already spent a whole lot of money, so I was very grateful when I heard back from UW. That's one thing that I will even also tell my students, that even after I had realized that I wanted to be a professor and that for that I needed a PhD, and I started trying to get a PhD, even then I had some obstacles in my way,
yeah,
in having to try to gain admission for 3 years before I finally made it. Right now, I'm starting my 4th year in the Econ PhD program. I'm already working on my dissertation, and I hope to be able to go back to Costa Rica and fulfill that dream that started about 6 or 7 years ago of teaching at a university after having been a translator and wedding singer.
That's awesome. Yeah, you talked about like how when you first got to college, you realized that you couldn't define yourself on being smart because like everyone's so smart. What do you think are your strongest values, and where do you think they came from?
So, the only reason why I hesitate about this is because there are some values that only come through experience, and that will only come through negative experiences.
Yeah.
In my case, I could say that I'm fairly persistent, but the only reason why I was persistent was because I had to confront rejection again and again and again. And I, at least at the time, I felt like I had no choice. So that, but it is my case, as it is the case for a lot of Latin Americans, that we are very attached to our families. So family values are very important. That feeling of reciprocity in everything, that you know that you have their support, they have your back, you have their back, and just knowing that no matter what, they can be there for you. I'll go even one step further in saying that I was back when I was in Costa Rica, I was used to seeing all of my direct family, all my brothers and their families, and my mom and a few of my uncles every single weekend. They would come to my mom's house and we would all just meet and talk and have some coffees, have some cake. Maybe that some of them would get there since lunchtime and not leave until after dinner. So we would spend a whole lot of quality time together. So that persistence, I guess that sense of family, that sense of belonging, and I would say that sense of belonging definitely has been integral in my time here, because school is hard and grad school is hard. It takes a deep toll on your mental health, and I can attest to how those challenges don't end when you graduate college. So you'd better have something or someone to hold on to.
What is something you'd like to tell your students, either here or like in Costa Rica, just about life?
I do have one thing that I currently already tell my students, that I will continue telling my students, and that is that they should realize that people are most unfortunately remarkably good at hiding how they're really feeling. So if they ever feel down, if they ever feel lonely, if they ever feel like they're the only one struggling with a class or the only one struggling with something personal that is affecting their academics, to just know that they are most definitely not the only ones, and that they should open up to someone, that they should rely on their friends if necessary, that they should reach out to a therapist. I have myself experience the value in just talking to someone. Even just talking about your problem will already make you feel better. Even if the other person doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
Just sharing
yeah.
can already make you feel better. So I would tell them to not lose hope and to know that more than likely they're not alone in their suffering. But I like this initiative.
Yeah.
I hope it spreads, and that you can hear from more people.
I feel like I'm trying to get at what people are really feeling, because I definitely feel too that we're all so closed off and afraid of being vulnerable. But if we all started sharing, we would all be accepting, and
yeah,
it would be a lot healthier.
Next guest, Catherine, shares with us a more extreme story of identity loss. In high school, working out was her life. She held 3 varsity letters in different sports and even weightlifting records for her high school. But this all changed when in sophomore year, Catherine was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis. Here's her story.
What gives you hope? I guess people performing genuine acts of kindness towards other people, like without expecting anything in return, you know? So like, I'm in a global health class right now, and all of the people that put so much energy and time into creating global health interventions to give like better conditions of living to people in disenfranchised communities.
Like, is there a particular like issue that you want to tackle?
Oof, that's a big one. So for me personally, I have ulcerative colitis, and that like affects me every single day.
What is that?
It's an autoimmune disease where basically my intestines, I just have constant ulcers, and it causes like really bad inflammation, leads to cancer, fistulas, stroke, death, like, and it's lifelong. There's no cure.
Could you talk more about like your journey with that?
So it was really hard because I was a sophomore in high school and I had 3 varsity letters. Like, working out was my entire life. I was a wrestler and I ran cross country, and I still to this day hold weightlifting records at my high school. Like, working out was my life. I spent 6 hours a day in the gym. Like, I was obsessed. And I started just noticing every time I went to the bathroom, it looked like someone got freaking murdered. There was just so much blood, and my stomach started hurting really bad. And I started going to doctors, and like, they had ideas like, oh, it might just be an intestine infection, because I would go swimming in the river a lot, and like, just stupid stuff like that. And because I was under 18, I had to go to a pediatric gastroenterologist, which there's only like 3 in the entire Pacific Northwest. So I had a colonoscopy scheduled like 6 months out, and they couldn't actually diagnose me or actually prescribe me medications that would work for me until that time. And luckily I ended up going on a family trip to Montana where they don't have that rule. I could just be seen by a normal gastroenterologist, and I got diagnosed and I got on medication like within a month. But part of ulcerative colitis, you have to keep your heart rate down to help limit inflammation. Like, you can't be working out intensely every day. So I had to stop all of my sports. I was planning on joining the Navy, and I was like already like working with recruiters and stuff, and that's like an automatic unfit your whole life. And that was, I'm from a really, really poor family, so that's how I thought I was going to pay for college. My whole life plan was just instantly put upside down, and I had no idea how I was going to pay for school or what I was going to do. And yeah, it was really, really hard. But yeah, getting that diagnosis was trash, because it was basically just your whole life, this is what you have, there's no cure. Yeah.
All of your plans were just done, with that one random thing.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, it was super hard, because my whole life I've always, like, if I decide to do something, I just do it. Like, my first year in wrestling, I literally lost every single match except my last one. My second year, I barely had a winning record, and my third year, I went to state as an alternate. Like, because I decided I would get good at it, and I did. And, like, I always had A's. Like, I would always just decide who I wanted to be and be it, and this was one thing that I couldn't decide against, and that killed me. I actually tried to wrestle my junior year after I got the diagnosis. I was like, fuck that, my medication will work, like, the inflammation will go down, it's whatever. And then I started actually trying to work out every day, and my stomach just got so awful. I would be in so much pain, I could barely stand, and like, I would get lightheaded and dizzy from blood loss, and so I had to realize, like, this is real. But yeah, no, it can feel really lonely, and there's like support groups on Facebook and Instagram and stuff that have really helped me.
There's so many disabilities that you just can't see, and then it's not like acknowledged. Like, that seems shitty.
Yeah, well, also, like, so symptoms can like flare with stress too, because it gets your heart rate up and then inflammation gets worse. And symptoms include like a lack of bowel control, intense stomach pain. So I used to be a manager at a pizza place, and anytime we got super busy, my symptoms would flare up and I'd have to run to the bathroom, and people would think, oh, Catherine's in the bathroom again because we're having a rush, and people would assume that I was like faking. And like, it was like when I first like had tumors, cancerous tumors removed, where people actually started taking my disease seriously.
What other reactions have you gotten from people?
So like, a bowel disease is not the sexiest thing in the world, you know? Yeah. Like, imagine being a 17-year-old girl and trying to go on dates and not being able to control your gas. Like, oh my god. And you know, or if you like have an accident, like, it's one of those things that people don't like to talk about. And I feel like with other chronic illnesses, like if you have an awful headache, you can talk about that. Or if you know, even the stomach pain, like, you can talk about that. But as soon as it's like, oh, I was stuck in the bathroom all day, and like, I woke up covered in my own feces, and I like couldn't make it to class because I had to shower and clean my bedding, and like, people don't want to hear about that. So it can be pretty isolating, just because there's this like weird stigma around like feces. People don't want to talk about it. And yeah, so most of the reactions are just like, okay, like, why are we talking about this? When for me, it's like, it's my whole life. Like, it happens to me every single day. And so it's hard to like not talk about it, you know? And when it does come up, like, people are like, does she want attention? Like, you know, it can be hard for invisible disabilities, because you look like everybody else, so you want to just try to keep up. And when you can't, you feel like defeated, or like you're letting it get the best of you. Like, it's just, it's really hard. I've taken 6 different types of medication, and the only thing that immediately aids my pain is marijuana. And like, the stigma behind that has been kind of hard, you know, because sometimes like, my options are, I can take a couple dabs in the morning and somewhat function and maybe get to class, or I can stay in bed in the fetal position and cry all day. A lot of people judge like marijuana use regardless of what it's for.
Yeah. Like, dealing with that sounds so hard, and then like on top of it having it be this thing that's like, I can't talk to anyone about it.
I think, so I work in the basement of UW's Med Center. Okay. I'm an administrative assistant for occupational health and research. So I work in this like tiny little cubicle surrounded by other cubicles in a freaking basement. So there's like very minimal ventilation. And every time my gas gets bad, I'm like praying for my coworkers. I'm like, oh my goodness, I should have just stayed home today. I'm so sorry.
Oh no. Yeah.
But my family has been like super supportive. They've all done like independent research and like realized kind of how severe it is, and they've all been super helpful. And like I actually got a boyfriend who's just amazing.
So you're on a medication, but you still experience a lot of the symptoms, but maybe like not as intensely.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what's going on?
So as far as I know right now with ulcerative colitis, about 47% of patients reach remission, which means 53% just experience symptoms their whole life. And basically they start you on like the medication that has the least amount of side effects that they can, which is usually like the least effective medication as well. So I started on like mesalamine. And so they give it like 3 months, and then if it's not helping, they bump you up to the next one, and they keep doing that. I've had side effects that included like hair loss, nausea that was so bad I couldn't eat anything because the room would start spinning after. Like have you ever had nausea so bad the room starts spinning? Like the nausea goes into every part of your body and all you feel is just queasy. Like it's absurd. Right now I'm on Humira. I just started that like a week ago. And I've been feeling super weak and shaky and like hungry, but I don't want to eat anything. I could go off about the medication cost. So Lialda has barely any side effects, and that's why it's pretty desirable. When I was on Lialda, I was spending $500 every 3 months for medication.
No way.
Yeah. My Humira costs $10 a month.
Whoa.
But that's the one that has ass tons of side effects and destroys your immune system.
Yeah.
So if you're impoverished, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like
that's before insurance too. Like, I mean, after insurance.
Yeah.
And so being a disability like rights activist, that really impacts me. That's actually why I'm interested in biochem. I've had to go on so many different pharmaceuticals in my life. And so finding different ones that have less side effects and can work better for people, and finding a cure for irritable bowel diseases like ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease is like really important to me. And that's kind of what I want to spend my life doing. I have a lot of hope. There's a lot more like advocacy for better healthcare, especially with this generation. Like, I feel like we really recognize how problematic our healthcare system is. And I have a lot of faith in this next generation of voters, especially being here at UW.
Totally. I think so too.
Thanks for joining us today on Red Square. If you have a story of your own that you want to share, email us at uwredsquare@gmail.com or just find us on Red Square in real life.
We hope you enjoyed listening.